Welcome to Grim Gossip. Before we start the show, I want to give a proper warning. The episode you are about to hear may include grim details about assault, rape, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Today's case is about the dark underworld of the internet. For some perspective, the surface web is what normal users browse when we shop or Google things. Then there's the deep web, which are websites hidden by passwords and firewalls that offer content which can't be available using a regular search engine. Then there's the dark web, which is a small part of the deep web. This consists of a multitude of illegal websites. There are sites that sell drugs or firearms, services such as hacking or hitmen, human trafficking and prostitution, as well as snuff films or child pornography. You can also talk to people all over the world privately about whatever you want without censorship. Matthew Graham was 17 when he fell into the dark web by accident. While surfing through a popular website called 4chan, he came across a post about how the infamous hacker group called Anonymous had revealed the grim underworld of depraved people. Their mission was to take down websites that had child pornography. This mission was called Operation Darknet. Unfortunately, this opened the door for Matthew, who turned out liked child porn and has admitted that he had previously had a proclivity to this when he was younger and tried to repress his desire for it. But as he dove deeper into the dark web and everything they had to offer, he really stuck to the most depraved part of the dark web, even contributing to this community eventually. Initially, when he was first getting into child porn, he noticed that talk of hurtcore was banned from any discussions or postings related to it. This prompted him to make his own websites where all of his patrons would be free to discuss and post whatever they wanted without any restrictions. He went on to create the dark web's most complex child porn network, known as the Pedo Empire, and he would infamously be known as Lux. For reference and clarification, hurtcore is a subgenre of porn that includes rape, sexual assault, or other non-consensual activities. It is a fetish for people who get aroused by the infliction of pain on another being that is not a willing participant. This is not exclusive to adults. This genre also includes children of any age and animals. Matthew would go on to create multiple sites for multiple fetishes. In order for you to be a member of his sites, you would need to upload your own original video of child abuse, meaning you would need to produce your own taping of some form of child abuse. One video is said to show two people using babies as pillows in a pillow fight, going on until the babies were deceased. This was a measure to ensure the police would never have access to his sites. He wanted a place where people, just like him or even worse, were free to post and discuss all of their depraved desires. He did this because he believed in free speech and called it just that. He created two specific sites for hurtcore. One was called Hurt to the Core. The other was called Love to the Core. On these sites, anything went. He himself never made videos, but he often found videos from others that he'd share. He also spoke to several other pedophiles on his site, encouraging sexual abuse. There is one instance when Matthew was giving a Russian man advice on how he could kidnap and rape a 5-year-old girl from his town. He also spoke to a British man who wanted advice on how he could rape a young girl who was in his care. One day, Matthew came across someone else's website called No Limits Fun, or NLF. This is where he would find a Hurtcore series called Daisy's Destruction. He purchased the series for $10,000. He liked what he saw so much, he decided to upload this to his own website in order to create more foot traffic. Daisy's Destruction was thought to be an urban legend. Even people on the surface web had heard of it, but many thought it to be fake. Unfortunately, that was not the case. This series would soon go viral on not only the dark web, but on the surface web as well. Though the video had not made it to the surface web, even people who had never used the dark web heard about it. This post would catch the attention of the authorities. The Dutch police had already discovered these videos on the hard drives of multiple pedophiles, but had a hard time locating its creator, where it was made, and the victim. They did, however, begin to close their net around the creator of the website these pedophiles were getting their content from. After 2 years of thorough investigation and additional help from other agencies, they knew where the feed was coming from, but had trouble narrowing down who in the house was the culprit. In the house lived Mr. and Mrs. Graham, their little girl, and their son Matthew. At first, the local police believed the father to be the culprit, as he is older and may have a little more experience under his belt. But Detective Senior Constable Christine Stafford didn't believe this at all. Based off their investigation, Matthew had a very small digital footprint, which seemed quite odd to Christine. For a young adult, Matthew had no signs of any other internet activity outside of Facebook, which was private and held nothing of interest. In August of 2014, the police raided Matthew's home, and Detective Christine Stafford's hunch was proven right. Come to find out, instead of attending his college classes like he was supposed to, he had been holed up in his room, glued to his computer. For the past 3 years, he had been building and running a pedophile empire. Matthew, of course, denied everything. Because he had no criminal record, was a neighborhood babysitter, and a star student, no one could believe what was being accused of him. During interrogation, the police had seized all of his electronics, but could not break into his computer. Unfortunately for them, his computer had been locked up tight. They couldn't break into it because of all of his firewalls and the encryptions he had placed on it. However, he did hand over his phone willingly, which was seemingly wiped clean. Only it wasn't completely. In hidden caches, 3 photos were recovered. 2 were of dead babies. The other was of someone standing on a baby. Although this was a terrible discovery, it wasn't enough to put him away for more than 15 years. They were afraid that if they didn't have anything else to hold on him, he would be able to leave with his possessions. In interrogation, Detective Christine Stafford gave Matthew 2 options. He could confess to his crimes, unlock his computer, and be charged in Australia. Or he could be extradited to America, where he would be charged with a whole host of crimes that would ensure his prison sentence would not be short or light. At this point, Matthew gave up his password, which was 64 characters long and came from memory. There was no written form of this password anywhere. Unlocking his computer opened up a huge case of pedophilia, which would lead them on a manhunt for the creator of Daisy's Destruction. That person would be Peter Scully, who was born in Melbourne, Australia on January 3, 1963. He was married with 2 children and was often described by people as sketchy or dodgy, and they were right. In 2005, he decided to leave his family and got himself a teenage Malaysian girlfriend named Ling. He pimped her out at sex parties as well as created an illegal escort service online where he could find sex work for her. Previous associates said Peter had a disturbing sexual history that no one could fathom. At the time, Peter also ran a real estate scheme that defrauded 20 investors out of $2.6 million. When his scheme was discovered, he went under investigation, which ended with him being charged with 117 offenses. But before he could be arrested, he fled to Manila, Philippines in 2011, where they do not have an extradition treaty with Australia. It was determined that if he ever stepped foot into an Australian airport again, he would be arrested on site. Unfortunately, he never returned. When he got to the Philippines, Peter quickly got himself another girlfriend named Lizelle Margallo, who would go on to become his main accomplice in terrible crimes. With her, he met a homeless 14-year-old girl named Carmian Alvarez in a bar. She had been prostituting herself on the streets for income. This is how Carmian would come into Peter's service. He would go on to rename her Angel. This is when Peter would decide to prey on poor families to give up their young girls. He promised them a job and money, which in the Philippines was a big deal considering the poverty in families was high. According to an interview with Carmian, done by Tara Brown with 60 Minutes Australia, after some time with him, Peter asked her if they would be able to adopt young street kids. She offered up her sister instead, saying they could get her to come and live with them, but Peter said no. He wanted young street kids aged 9 and 12. So Carmian went out and did just that. She found two girls who she convinced to go home with her in exchange for food. One is named Rosie, and the other is her cousin, who will remain unnamed. When they were brought back to the house, they were fed. But then after this, Peter told them to get naked. This is when he put dog collars on them and took photos of them. Then he directed them to do other things that he would videotape. On the first day, they were forced into a bath together on camera. Rosie was then forced to perform sexual acts on her own cousin as he recorded them and whatever he requested them to do, including performing fellatio on him. The next day, after breakfast, the girls were forced to dig holes. While they were digging, they found out that if they did not comply with Peter's commands, this is where they'd be buried. During one of Peter's assaults, Rosie was screaming so loud that Carmian covered her face with pillows to stifle her. Then Rosie and her cousin were forced to drink alcohol, which caused Rosie to pass out. She woke up in the grave they had been digging, covered in dirt. She was told she was placed there because she had been crying so much for her mother the night before, as though this was her punishment. She was forced to get up and continue digging. And then the abuse continued, all of it being taped and uploaded for sale on their No Limits Fund website, which people paid up to $10,000 for. 5 days after kidnapping the girls, Carmian came home after 2 days of being away and released them, apparently due to remorse. The girls ran back to their families immediately. They went to the local police and told them everything. From there, Carmian was found and arrested. But after Carmian had been arrested, she spilled all of their secrets, their victims, what they did, and where they did it. She even led the authorities directly to where they lived and filmed everything. Another one of their victims was a girl who was 8 years old. The mother, Arlene Loyola, had met Lizelle, who had promised Arlene she would be fed, clothed, and housed. As Arlene was a mother of 7, she agreed and allowed Lizelle to take her daughter. But after 2 weeks, she felt guilty for letting her daughter go, so she went to get her daughter and bring her back. When she brought her daughter back, though, she realized her daughter had been beaten and raped repeatedly. She says she'll never forgive herself for this. The next victims were Daisy, 1.5 years old, Barbie, 12 years old, and Liza, 11 years old. They were all related. Barbie, who had lost her mother, was living with her aunt at the time. They were given to Lizelle under the same pretense, with the promise of a better life for the girls, and she was able to provide. Unfortunately, they were subjected to all manners of depravity under Peter's watchful camera. Barbie was forced to perform acts of torture on the other girls. Carmianne and Lizelle appeared on the camera to torture all three of them for camera's sake, but in masks in order to hide their identities. For one of his videos, Peter is said to have recorded the torture, rape, and murder of Barbie. He strangled her on camera, then buried her under the kitchen in their home and uploaded the footage on No Limits Fun. The timeline is unclear, but sometime during or after this, Daisy's destruction was being filmed. The opening scene for this series says the following, quote, "Come see a child's innocence lost. Used as a tool, she'll learn how to please her mistress. Her body will be ravaged, her dignity stolen," unquote. 18-month-old Daisy's mouth would be duct taped, and her limbs would be tied in a manner that would have her spread eagle. She was hung upside down, waterboarded, whipped, and tortured for hours. Multiple sexual devices were used on her. Hot wax had been poured on her. Her genitals were burned. Alligator clips were used to penetrate her. Barbed wire was used on her, and she was raped. Even though Carmianne, Lizelle, and Peter were all in the videos, Lizelle was the main abuser. Peter made an appearance on camera when he raped Daisy, and if you couldn't see him, you'd be able to hear him giving commands from behind the camera. But he took measures to pixelate his face in order to hide his identity while the women continued wearing masks. At this point, the series, which was going for $10,000, had made it to Matthew's Hurt to the Core website, which, as you know, garnered attention from the authorities. The National Bureau of Investigations, or NBI, had caught wind of Daisy's destruction and began investigating. They knew the women were of the Philippines, but they couldn't place the man. He was white, but his face was pixelated, so they couldn't do much more. They did notice, however, that he'd had an accent, but they couldn't place it. Luckily, someone who was helping with the investigation heard the accent and knew he was Australian, which helped to narrow down their search. And thanks to Matthew Graham, this is how Daisy's destruction was even uncovered. On February 20th, 2015, one of Peter's rented homes in the Philippines was raided. He was just sitting in his dining room when the police came up on the house and pointed guns at him through the window, instructing him not to move. He was in just a yellow t-shirt and tidy whities when he was arrested. Both he and Lizelle were taken into custody to be questioned. However, there is no apparent evidence proving Lizelle's involvement in these crimes except for her own confession, so they had to release her. But by the time they did find evidence and official charges were made, she was in the wind. Lizelle went on the run and changed her name to Shannon Carpio and eventually moved in with another girl. She started an online page as a workout influencer, living the high life in Cebu City, even treating her new roommates and friends to fancy dinners and nights out. She claimed she had married a French software millionaire who financed her life. She was also a tour guide for the city who offered full services for the right price. She was even bold enough to talk about her relationship with Peter Scully, although it would appear she never disclosed their entire relationship as her roommate never knew about the terrible crimes Lizel had committed with him. Come to find out, Peter Scully was the one who was funding her lifestyle. He was able to do this because he was still making money with her, even though he was in prison. Yes, he was still in contact with Lizel throughout his imprisonment through Facebook, WhatsApp, and Skype. He had many demands, including access to a smartphone and specific meals. Lizel was still recruiting girls for their No Limits Fun website. At some point, Lizel had changed her name to Gina Carpio, even possessing legal documents in that name to proclaim that was her. On January 24th, 2017, a whole 2 years after Scully was arrested, while she was at Sunset Beach Resort, someone came up to her and asked her if she was Gina. When she confirmed it, she was arrested immediately. Turns out, that person was an agent. After Lizel's arrest, Peter's empire crumbled. Everything came to light, including multiple notable people who were involved in some way, shape, or form. Even if they weren't on camera, they were all culpable. Maria Dorothea Chia was also recruiting girls for Peter and Lizel. She was sentenced to 9 years in prison as an accomplice. Alexander Lau was a taxi driver who provided his services to Peter. He transported not only Peter, but the victims to and from their set locations. He also received 9 years. Christian Roth is a German national who bought his time with the victim for something around $1,800. When the victim was told, quote, "the German is coming for you," unquote, she was luckily able to escape. Although there are warrants for his arrest in the Philippines, Christian remains free. Aniel Cantano de Oliveira is a doctor in Brazil. He was found to be funding the No Limits crew, sending them money for production of their content, like an investor of some sort. He called himself Dr. Hyde. When he was arrested, the police found 37,000 images and over 700 videos of child pornography. It was discovered that he had gotten involved with the No Limits Fun crew when he was still in med school, even providing advice on how they could get drugs and drug or incapacitate the children without killing them. He was 29 when he was arrested. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Marshall Ruskin is known to have traveled to the Philippines 15 times from April 2013 to April 2016. It was discovered that he had paid Lizel through Western Union for services multiple times. Police are inclined to believe these payments were for specific services, which include child abuse, but this cannot be proven. They, of course, are only speculating this because of the nature of Lizel's and Peter's work. And apparently, Marshall was able to make any viable trace of online payments untraceable. This might be because he was previously the webmaster for the Department of Defense for Winnipeg. In 2019, his home was raided and he was arrested. Some of his devices were seized, but no one has been able to get past the encryptions on them. The authorities have had to put in several requests in order to keep those devices in their possession. As of now, Marshall is a free man since there is no physical evidence aside from some payments to Lizel. There is nothing to prove his involvement in any child abuse. A couple of instances have been revealed of him requesting specific acts from confidential informants, though. CBD.ca News stated Marshall offered a confidential informant $1,000 to watch their 4-year-old daughter undress. He even offered $2,000 for the 4-year-old to perform fellatio on him. In another event, he had paid an informant $100 for a date with a 14-year-old girl, who wasn't 14 at all. She was actually 21. Court documents revealed that that Marshall also stated he had two apartments, one for him and his family, and one where he could bring back his sexual endeavors. One report would reveal that Marshall had expressed a fantasy where he'd break into a little girl's room and force himself on her. He even described the desire for her to fight and push on his chest in order to get him off. To this day, no hard evidence has been provided, and Marshall remains free, although he is still wanted in the Philippines. Liza and Daisy survived and are still alive, but are horribly traumatized. Scars, both physically and mentally, remain with them forever. Liza had tried to recover and make a better life for herself. She even got married, had a child, and started college. But she lost her husband and had to drop out of school because she couldn't afford it. Lizelle, while in captivity, would bring the authorities back to the house and help them uncover the body of Barbie, who was buried under the kitchen. In 2018, Peter and Lizelle were sentenced to life in prison in the Philippines, and just 4 years later, they were both sentenced to an additional 120 years each for another batch of crimes relating to their website. Carmian was also serving life sentence alongside them. The prosecutors on this case requested that the death penalty be reinstated for Peter Scully, but they were denied. They believed that the firing squad should be brought back for this case alone. Instead, he was sentenced to life in prison. Peter's lawyer, Alondra Palubna, was the one who made the request for certain provisions while Peter was in prison in exchange for information, such as phones, fresh meat like chicken and pork for meals, as well as a fan to cool himself since he was hot in the Philippines. Although Peter already had life in prison, additional cases were still being built against him for additional crimes. But a mysterious fire broke out in the Hall of Justice in the Cagayan de Oro. This would destroy almost all of the physical evidence against him, which included a video camera, a computer, and a memory card, which held more evidence. The origins of how this fire started was never uncovered, so this being an inside job was never revealed, although there had been speculation that Peter had paid someone to set the fire to destroy the evidence and prevent any additional charges. His lawyer, as it turns out, was not a good man. In April of 2012, a child's rights organization rescued a horde of underage girls who were being sold. One of the girls, a 10-year-old, filed a complaint on Michael John Collins. This man, who is a U.S. citizen, along with his accomplice, Sheena Maglinite, also known as Choi Choi, had sold her and other girls into sex slavery. Although Sheena's charges were dropped, they pursued Michael. The children that were rescued from them were taken and placed into custody and protection. They were placed in a shelter, but they ran away from that shelter and ran into a woman named Pretty May, who was the wife of Michael Collins. She promptly took them back to him to get them back into service, but they soon escaped from captivity again and ran back to the shelter. But the 10-year-old whistleblower was captured again. Instead of bringing her back to Michael, though, she was brought to none other than the infamous lawyer, Alondra Palubna. But an employee of the Children's Right Organization spotted the 10-year-old and took her in immediately. The 10-year-old was outside of the Flamingo Bar, which was owned by Alondra Palubna. Michael Collins was arrested, and his case was to be tried, but records would go on to show that Alondra had paid the 10-year-old and her family to keep their mouths shut. Alondra has recently been barred from continuing his law degree. He had been discovered trying to find other victims to pay them and their families off as well in order to drop the cases, but the families and the victims were already in the witness protection program. Peter, in his interview with Tara Brown with 60 Minutes Australia, was subjected to multiple difficult questions, including if he ever had victims in Australia, or if he ever victimized his own children, which he said no to. He was offended that he was even asked about his own children. Tara Brown even asked about one more unknown victim that could not be located, which he stated, quote, "From now on, my answer will be, everything will be in the journal. You can keep asking questions, but that will be my answer," unquote. He would not give an answer for whether there was one more victim, if she was still alive, or if he felt remorse. Remorse for what he had done, or remorse for having been caught. He was even asked if the pedophilia is what drove him and if the urges were always there. There were no answers from him. He just kept saying it'd be in the journal, which he said would eventually be for sale. As of today, Peter, Lizelle, and Carmian are rotting in jail alongside their accomplices. Even though there have been multiple arrests and it feels as though the authorities have caught the main culprits along with their accomplices, this war is far from over. The Philippines is a well-known dark area to go to in order to pay for illegal things due to poverty. But this act is not exclusive to the Philippines. This happens all over the world. If you know of any of these acts or notice any of these acts, please call the U.S. National Child Abuse Hotline at 1-800-4-A-CHILD or 1-800-422-4453. The Philippines hotline is 0968-7311-032. And that is where the case ends. If you guys enjoyed today's episode, there's many more to come. Hit the subscribe button so that you get notifications when new episodes drop. If you have any suggestions, send them my way at grimgossippod@gmail.com and follow me on Instagram at grimgossippod. All websites used for the research is in the show notes if you guys want to take a deeper dive into this case. Thank you for listening. Until next time.